Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How are you?
Excellent. Doing good. Everything is gearing up. Every time we turn around, we've got more and more activity. More states are beginning to open up. Hopefully, wherever you're at in your particular state or city, you're able to begin that process. So tonight, Straight Talk, episode number 77, Han and I wanted to talk about building systems and construction. We've gotten a lot of questions, a lot of discussion around the issue of, okay, now that we're coming out of this COVID-19 virus issue, you know, obviously it's still a concern, but we need to start moving forward. And there's a lot of things that kind of need to be addressed. The old norm is no longer, and we need to start talking about those. Tonight's discussion is not germane to just a new construction or to a renovation. It really is for both areas, but each one of them is a little different. So we wanted to start off with, Han, you and I were talking before the show. We were talking about walls. Now, you can say walls are like, really? You guys are going to talk about walls? Well, walls are actually really important when it comes to a dental facility in a bunch of ways. And in essence, you have to look at the wall, what it's used for, why it's there, and some technical issue and you know, we apologize if we get too deep into the weeds sometimes, but, you know, this stuff is kind of important and it needs to be done right. Doesn't, Han? I mean, we wanted to talk about the walls between operatories. Let's start out there.
Yeah, I think when we say wall, it doesn't necessarily have to be, made of wood stud with drywall. A wall is simply a physical barrier that divide, or subdivide two space into a space into two. Okay, so the wall assemblies that are often found in majority of commercial offices, including dentist office, are either wood studs or metal studs, and then cover with drywall. Whether it is half-inch drywall or 5/8-inch drywall, standard drywall or fire-rated drywall, it gets a little too technical. What we often the decisions of what wall assembly to use should be look at what is the purpose of that wall and what do you want the wall to perform. Is it simply to divide the space? Do you want it to be full height, meaning that go to the ceiling, or go to the go to the roof structure? Do you want it to be short? Do you want to see through it? Do you want it to have glass in it? Do you want it to be out of glass or some other material? Do you need to address noise transmission? There's a whole number of slew of things that involve in the design of a wall. Okay.
So if you're looking at, let's say the doctors are looking at what we talked about before, and let's say they have a bunch of open bays right now, and they're saying, I need to isolate my operatory from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 and so on. And so I need to put in a wall. That's a simple, you know, that would be the simple solution. We've got to put a wall in to separate these operatories, just like you're putting a barrier, for example, between you and your staff when you check in or check out. So if you're looking at your wall to do that, that's a totally different wall system than if you're looking at a wall that needs to isolate the room because you're going to do negative pressure in that operatory, and you're also going to want to isolate it from sound so that, for example, you want to hold up to the HEPA requirements for sound transmission between the two, so you can't have conversations that are legible between the two spaces, correct?
Correct. That is correct.
And those are two different, totally different walls.
Yeah. Yes, it is. First of all, because I think majority of the people, majority of the dentists, are in an existing office. And so majority of the discussion will be more lean toward retrofitting. Okay, so you have an open bay, let's say whether you're an orthodontist or a pediatric dentist, because that's the, you know, the type of facility with open bays. If you're lucky enough that the chair is sufficiently wide enough, you know, far enough apart that you can actually put in a wall to divide, to subdivide that open bay into more private treatment room. If not, then drastic redesign of those open bay need to be done for you to be able to, you know, subdivide the chairs into more private treatment room. Usually, when you have to do that, that means you may have to sacrifice a chair, unless you have additional space, you know, within the area that can be done. But that's probably where the service and knowledge of an architect would be advantageous, because they can look at just such as ourselves, we can look at the problem, the limitations, and analyze what is some of the things that can be done so that minimize the necessity for you to sacrifice a chair, because a chair is production, and you don't want to lose production while you're trying to meet the requirement, everything else has to do with isolations and separations and all that good stuff. So it's the first thing is, can it be done? Physically, it can be done before you determine what wall system will work. Jim?
So when you're talking about that, if you're in an existing space, obviously you have to factor in the issue of what has to be torn up and how you're going to logistically do that. You know, how much do you have to tear up to get to the point of where you want to be? You know, if you're moving chairs because your spacing's off, obviously you're tearing up floors. If you're on a concrete slab, that's a lot messier than if you have a crawl space or a basement. But all three mean you're tearing some things up to be able to get to the point where you can build the new. So Hanyu and I were laughing when we were doing our pre-prep and basically said, you know, there's destruction that has to happen first.
Yeah,
it's inevitable. There's going to be some destruction. Now, the lucky folks are the ones that are pre-planning their new facility, and they can integrate these thoughts or these ideas in now before they've already built something. Now, obviously, you have to plan for it and plan for it properly, because if you're all done with your design and you haven't thought about this, well, then you got to go back and redo. But at least that's a lot easier than tearing something up that's already been built.
Yeah, actually, I think I think it's a worthwhile step back to look at if you are in the process, at least in the design process, regardless of how far along you've been, okay, it's a worthwhile thing to reassess what you have because I think regrets will follow you if you simply say, we have gone too far to go back. Okay, and if it's not built yet, you still have time. Okay, so it mainly, yeah, Jim and I was talking about it, and we go, well, if you are, there's also two factors. If you own the building, that's a different issue. Okay, you have options. If you are in a lease space before you go and deconstruct so that you can make the modification, is it the right thing to do financially? What are you giving up, and is it the right thing? How much time do you have left on your lease? Is it best to stay there, or should we look at, plan B, relocation? Not that we're advocating that, because it costs a lot to relocate, but you have to look at all of that from a financial standpoint too. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're doing a negative pressure, for example, within a particular operatory, your wall assembly has to go, it has to be treated in the sense that it has to go tight to the ceiling, to the deck above, not to just the ceiling. And you basically need to create cubicles. You need to create complete boxes that are sealed top and bottom and all around the sides for each one of those. And then also we're going to talk about doors and how that gets integrated in there. Because obviously, there's been this big discussion about negative pressure is important for operatories and or clinical space. So it's a lot easier to negative pressure a operatory room than it is to try to negative pressure the whole clinical wing of a building.
Yep.
Go back to our last. Yeah. Go back to our last time before podcast with Nate from Thorson Baker, and we had a lengthy discussion about, just what's involved in trying to negative pressure a space. Han, you were going to say?
Yeah. So if you are there's a if you're in a, I'm just going to throw this on the table for discussion, Jim. If you're in a negative pressure room, okay, every penetration into the wall or ceiling need to be sealed. Okay. Also, a common practice in a lot of modern dentist office, and I think it depends who you talk to. If they're manufacturer or equipment people, they can sell you as much equipment, much cabinets as they can get away with. But recessed cabinetry have been a common occurrence in a lot of modern dentist offices. So when you have recessed cabinetries, those basically will all have to be gasketed. Otherwise, your negative pressure room may have negative performance. Am I on track on that, Jim?
Oh, yeah. You're basically sucking air from what's over on the other side of that recess. And, if it's the other operatory beside you, then you're taking it from there. If it's the clinical corridor, you're taking it from there. If it's the, let's say your operatory butts up against a staff lounge, wherever, you're taking it from there. So any place, it could be a restroom, any place is adjacent to that operatory where you've recessed a cabinet into the wall, that has to be properly dealt with and gasketed to be able to seal it.
And it, you know, it those are it may sound like a small detail, but it's not. Let's say if you decided to put a recessed cabinet into a wall, I have not seen any cabinetry, dental cabinetry that that are designed with gasket for this type of application, for negative pressure room application. But let's assume that they managed it, they listen, they go, that sounds like a good thing to do. The outlets that are in the wall on the other side of the wall would also have to be gasketed, because anything that within the wall would become like a little you know, a little opening that you can suck the air into. So minor stuff, but it could be a major stuff if it's not done properly. Jump.
Right. Exactly. And like you say, Hunt, walls can be made out of a lot of things. It doesn't have to be steel studs or wood studs and drywall. But no matter what, all of this discussion is still germane. You've got to be able to deal with it. And it's based upon what you're trying to do within that room. Now, if you're not doing a negative pressure room, and all you want to do is isolate that room so that operatory one and operatory two are separate from each other, and you're going to handle the airborne pathogen as it's floating around there in a different way other than negative pressure, then you don't have to take the wall up to the deck or to the roof structure above. You you can take the wall up to the ceiling, for that matter. As long as your ceiling is of a construction that allows you to separate operatory one from operatory two, then you're fine. And then, you know, the whole issue of dealing with sound and that kind of stuff, that goes back to kind of the norm. The other issues that we're talking about, and kind of segues nicely into this, is, all right, I want to seal off my operatories into individual cubicles, individual little boxes. Hopefully they're not too small, but at least individual boxes. Well, now you've got to get in and out of that box. So how are you going to do that? You have to put in some kind of door. And doors are a discussion that, well, Han, you and I could probably spend 2 hours on doors. And we probably would still not cover everything when it comes to a particular door. But our doors are going to be broken up into three categories. Actually, two categories and one subcategory. Two categories are, there's swinging doors, and then there's sliding doors. Now, the sliding doors are broken up into two pieces. You're either going to have a pocket door, or you're going to have a sliding door on a rail. So let's start back with the whole issue of swinging doors. Let's talk about a swinging door. But is it going to be one or two of them, the whole nine yards?
Perfect. Okay. We're assuming that your current treatment room have doors, whether it's or door openings, whether it's a, you know, one opening or two opening. The first thing is, can it be done? Now, if you have a treatment room that's wide enough, then that shouldn't be too big of an issue. I think that the biggest hurdle to jump is if you put in a door, will ADA compliance come into effect? And that is a question that need to be asked from your building, your building code official. Some municipalities are so hard-nosed that if you have a treatment room with a door, all treatment room with door have to be ADA, not just one or a percentage of all. Okay. And yes, we had done offices in those municipalities. It's very too stringent, very unreasonable. But that's a big major question that you have to ask. If you put in a door, a swinging door, because you need more privacy, or you want to make sure that the indoor air quality of those treatment room can be handled appropriately, and so on. That's the first question. Will you be forced or required to make sure that the ADA requirement won't come into effect? What we mean
now,
is that
when you say ADA, you mean the American with Disabilities Act. Not the American Dental
Association. Not the American Dental Association. Okay. With the ADA, what I meant by that is when you have a swing, you first of all, when you put in a swinging door, that door, when it opens from the face of the door to the face of the frame, it has to stop. You have to be minimum 32 inches clear. That way, a wheelchair can come through. Okay, if your doorway is 36 inches wide, then you shouldn't have a problem because the door, you can put a door and a door swing in it. The first challenge is if ADA come into effect, you need to have a minimum clear area on the latch side. That's the side with the lever. If your door is pulled toward you, then you need 18 inches clear to the next obstruction from that door opening. If you're on the push side, then you need 12 inches. So most cases, you're not going to install a door into a treatment room swinging outward into the corridor, okay? First of all, it doesn't make sense. Two, more likely, the code official won't allow you to do that, okay, because it's too dangerous. And so when you look at it, do you have the clear space from the door frame to your cabinets? Most likely, the answer is probably not. Okay, that's why I say check with your building official, make sure that you can do it. A swing door is the most ideal door because it is the most, it provides the best performance on everything else that you need. Noise transmission, operational, and most of the hardware are designed for that kind of door. The sliding door, whether it's surface mounted or a pocket door, they're very limited in hardware. They cost more, and they don't perform, they can't match the swinging door.
We're gonna jump into the sliding in a minute, but let's still back on the swinging door. So in the swinging door scenario, the only way to get around those dimensions you just talked about is to put automatic doors in. So doors that open by themselves,
yep,
by pushing a button. So
sure.
Now, Hong, you and I were talking before the show again about you can pretty much solve any problem. It's just a matter of how much money you're going to throw at it. So if you have 10 operatories and you're putting in 10 doors at minimum, maybe you have two doors into each, so you're putting in 20 doors. But at the same time, you don't have room to put in swinging doors that meet ADA requirement, you've got to put in 10 or 20 automatic door openers. That tends to get a little pricey pretty quickly.
Let me save you some money right away on that topic. If you have two doors in your treatment room, okay, the dual entry doors, only one of them have to be ADA compliant because more likely majority of the facility, the second door, which is designed for your assistant to get in and out of, are rarely ever the same size of the doctor's door, okay? But even that, only one, even if both doors are 36 inch wide, only one need to be ADA compliant. They would be automatic operator.
But still, 10,
it costs.
10 operable doors are pretty expensive.
Yes.
How many of you have? So, but you know, when it comes down to it, if you've got to have doors, there's ways. There's ways of solving it. Now, let's go back into the reason of why you want to put a door in. If you're putting a negative pressure room, you're doing a negative pressure in your operatory, and you went to all the trouble to get the walls the way they should be. Now you've got to have the door that works that way. A swinging door will give you the best potential for seal. You can seal a swinging door a lot easier than you can any other door. So you're going to have less air coming in from adjacent spaces. And you can you'll be able to control that a whole lot better as opposed to if you had a slider or a pocket. So a swinging door is better when it comes to dealing with negative pressure. Now, if you're not doing a negative pressure, then it's not as critical, I guess. Now, the doors themselves, we didn't even start the discussion, and we probably should have, having to do with the doors themselves. A door just doesn't have to be a solid door. In actuality, you almost don't want it to be a solid door. You want to have something in the way of either a translucent or transparent glass, or at least the ability to kind of see that there's activity or whatever on the other side of that door. Don't you, Hunt?
Yeah, and Jim, to clarify that, because when we talk about solid door, sometimes we talk about the core, the construction of the door. But
no,
in terms of what
about
you're talking
visually,
about... visibility. Okay. You're right. I was talking to Jim earlier. Is that I'm surprised when I read discussions about doors that there is a high percentage of dentists that are kind of surprised that their door have to have glass. Okay. There is no code that say that you have to have vision panel in your treatment room door, okay? But there is a concern that you should be aware of so you can address it. Is that you want to be able to have glass? You should have glass in your in your treatment room door between the corridor and the treatment room itself, so that there is a visual connection within the room and into the corridor. It's to protect you. Because let's say somebody got a hair, and they go, "Doctor so-and-so inappropriately touched me." A solid door will, without any vision panel, would be a problem. Okay, you want to have as much visibility, almost like into a fishbowl. Okay, it provides a division, but the glass itself, there's a number of ways you can treat the glass so you still have privacy but not opaqueness, if that makes sense. Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt, it does make a lot of sense. And so, I mean, you've got the visual aspect, you've got the privacy aspect, you've got the aesthetic aspect, because obviously you've got four walls, and you may or may not have a window, and especially if you don't have a window, then to be able to look out past that four walls becomes less claustrophobic. So that's why you'd want to put in a vision panel of some sort. And then you have the safety issue. The safety issue is as you're opening the door or coming and going, you want to make sure there's nobody standing on the other side of that door when you open or close that door and you whack into it. That happens more than you think. And especially if you've got a busy office with a lot of people technicians and staff and everybody else going in and out. And then also now with the COVID-19, from an isolation standpoint, you want to be able to say, okay, that room is occupied. Don't go into that room. They're in the process of treatment. The worst thing you would have happen is you open that door while they're in the middle of treatment. All of that aerosol and contaminant potentially could escape out that door and totally just do away with your whole idea of separation between operatories 1, 2, 3, and 4. So something to think about, at least from a from a door standpoint. And it holds true for swinging doors, pocket doors, sliding doors, any kind of doors. You really want to think about what to do with that particular door. So from a swinging door, go ahead, huh?
Go ahead and finish.
No, I'm just saying from a swinging door, there's a lot of hardware potential, capability. There's a lot of different systems that are out there that you can use, everything from motion, touchless kind of stuff, to paddles, to there's a lot of things you can do on your door from a swinging door, because that's the most popular door type. It really is. So before we jump into the next two, let's talk about, do you have anything else you want to talk about on swingers?
Yeah, actually, your swinging door is the most really available door. It offers a lot more design, opportunities. As far as glass and safety is concerned, it should be tempered glass. You can even upgrade to laminate glass if you like. So there's a and another thing is glass is a lot easier to maintain and clean. So it's a it's an added value to have more glass in your office. You're going to spend a little bit more money on hardware, but invest into high quality hardware so that it performs and last you a lot longer than just simply go with the stuff that you pick up at Home Depot meant for your home. Jim?
Absolutely. Okay, now let's transition into the next door type, which are obviously pocket or sliders. Both of those can be just like we talked about in the swinging door scenario. You can have a glass panel. You can have a view panel that can be, transparent, can be translucent, can be, have textures with patterns in it, all that kind of good stuff. From a logistical standpoint, both doors do the same thing. They slide out of the way, as opposed to the swinger, which, of course, swings in one direction or another. So in that sense, these two doors theoretically are a little bit easier to install from a room standpoint. So if you have, it's depending on which one you use, you might have a better chance of getting a sliding door in if you couldn't put in a swinging door. But you have to remember about where does that door go when it's open. So, Han, you got a 36-inch door, and it has to slide either left or the right. There has to be a place for that 36-inch door to go while it's open. So if there's stuff in the wall, if there's plumbing, if there's electrical lines, if there's the switch to the X-ray system, if there's wires and cables to your monitor, all those things maybe are in that head wall, as we call it, that has to be looked at to see if you can actually even physically slide the door in through there. If there's a structural column, for example, if it's in the way, or if there's a vent pipe coming up from the floor below, who knows what you could have in that wall. That all has to be looked at so that you can properly slide that door off to the left or the right to be able to open it up and move from that. So from a planning standpoint, it's real simple. You've got a 3-foot door, you better have 6 feet a clear space that doesn't have anything in the way. Obviously, half of it's in a wall, but you have to make sure that there's nothing in that wall. Does that make sense, Hon?
Did you say 6 feet, Jim?
Yeah, 3 feet and 3 feet.
Well, meaning that the opening of the door plus the wall space for the door to come into.
Right. Exactly. So you need to have the ability to have 6 feet of clear space. So if your operatory, you have a single door, if you have a single door into your operatory, if your operatory is 8 feet wide and there's nothing in the way, you theoretically could put a single 3 foot sliding door in theory.
In theory. Yeah. If you have a dual entry, okay,
that's a
different issue. Okay, but to be, you know, this is a bit more nut and bolts. If you slide the door to close the opening on the side, you know, where it's coming to the wall, you're going to have a frame for that door to come into, so that you have a true closure. Okay. So if that dimension there is 2 to 3 inches, just depends on who you talk to. But typically 2 inches should do. So you have if you have a 36-inch door, the door itself, the physical door, would more likely be 30 inches, because when that door is in the closed position, there is a little bit of access so that it slides into the frame on both ends, so you don't have air gaps between them. So the door is a little wider. Therefore, a 6 foot wide wall space need to increase to accommodate those little dimensions. In theory, it would work. In actual application, you need more wall space. Okay,
yeah,
so
Jim was talking a little bit more.
Now, yeah.
The issue with the door itself is that, like we talked about briefly, if you're doing a negative pressure room, your operatory is going to be a negative pressure. Your engineer needs to know that you're using either a sliding door or a pocket door, because that door will leak, if we want to use that word, it will leak more air because it's not as tightly sealed as a swinging door is. So you're going to have areas underneath the bottom of it. You're going to have areas around the side of it. You're going to have areas on the top of it where air will leak in from the clinical corridor, for example. So they would have to size the exhaust from the clinical, I'm sorry, exhaust from the operatory. They'd have to size it so, knowing that they're going to be actually sucking some air from the clinical corridor along with the air within the operatory itself. I know it's real technical, but it's something very important to understand, that if you don't do it, you're basically negating the whole issue of the negative pressure. Now, if you're not doing a negative pressure room, it doesn't matter. Right, huh?
Right, right. The whole purpose is, if you are informed about it, then you can make the right decision. Because sometimes your expectation cannot be done simply because it can't be done. Okay? So it all depends on what you're trying to achieve and what solution would be best for you to successfully achieve that objective. But the pocket doors have its place, sliding door has its place, but all this little detail that pertain to those type of doors have to be addressed, or you'll be really shocked when you bought the door and you can't put it up.
or it doesn't function the way you think it does, and the next thing you know is like, okay, well, why'd I spend all this money? Now,
yeah, it looks sexy on cover magazines.
Well, yeah. Okay. And unfortunately, a lot of decisions are poorly made from those particular publications, and you say, I want it to look like this, not knowing that it won't function. And, you know, Han and I have always been advocates of it has to function to be a success. It just doesn't have to look good. It has to do both. It has to function and look good to be able to be a success. And so from a pocket door standpoint, there's hardware out there. There's even the ability to have operable pocket doors. I mean, you can have an automatic pocket door if you want it. Now, it's not cheap, but you can do it. You can have a push pad on the outside. You hit it with your elbow, and that door opens. We all used to, when we were growing up watching Star Trek, we saw it all the time, right? Well, it exists.
That's right.
It exists, and it can be placed. And, you know, can be put in your operatory. Now, the difference between, we haven't really talked too much about, is the sliding door. Now, a sliding door is different from a pocket door in that the sliding door rides on a rail that's typically on the outside of the wall, not inside the wall. So let's say you have a scenario where, you know, I don't want to put a swinging door, or I can't. I can't put a pocket door in because there's crap in the wall. I don't have that magic 6 foot plus of clear space to be able to slide this door in and out. But my wall on the outside, for specifically the clinical corridor, is in fact clear. So I could put a rail in and I could slide a door back and forth on this rail, and I could have at least 6 feet of rail, maybe a little bit more typically, and I could slide the door across the opening and slide it back out of the way. And so the sliding door, and a lot of people sometimes call them barn doors because that's really where they originally were invented for. The sliding door is a possibility. It has a different look. It also does not seal near as well as a swinging door. Of all three doors, it's the least in the way of sealing. So it doesn't, you know, you're going to get more air gaps because there's areas around the edges and so on and so forth. It rides a little bit away from the wall itself because you don't want it rubbing against the wall as it opens and closes. And so it will be a possibility, but keep in mind, if you're doing a negative pressure, let your engineer know that you've got a sliding door. That's even more leaky, and so they're going to have to increase their exhausting even that much more to be able to get a negative pressure within the space. Same holds true, though, right, Han? There's hardware for it. You can create it. It could be partially glass. A lot of things.
Question, Jim. I've seen it shown on a number of projects that are posted for critique. The thing is, when you have sliding door, the barn door, is it ever truly the opening? The actual opening of the doorway, does the door ever truly conceal or bypass it? You know, like in a pocket door, the pocket door itself goes into the pocket. You don't see the door. You see the
right.
edge of the door. Okay?
Right.
It all depends on who you talk to when it comes to, because it comes to ADA requirement. Yes, pocket door... ADA requirements do apply to pocket doors too, okay? And there's hardware. There's only one set of hardware that I fully staying behind that would meet the ADA requirement. But in the sliding door, the leading edge of the door, it's never truly bypass the opening of the door opening, correct? Because there's always so in other words, your opening is the actual door opening is wider, so that when the door is in the open position, that it have a portion of the door for the hardware for you to actually close the door.
Exactly.
From the inside.
From the inside. That's exactly right. So it's a technical issue, and it's something that, you know, good architects understand and, you know, can put this stuff together and make it work. But you're right. To get a particular opening, let's say a 32-inch or a 36-inch opening, your door is going to be a little bit bigger and your opening is going to be a little bit bigger because there's always an overlap. So when you want to, and like even when you want to close that door and you slide it closed, remember, it's hanging in front of the opening by usually about a quarter inch or so. So you actually have a wider door than your opening because you want to close off that opening visually. If not, if your door is the exact same size as the hole that you're sliding into or sliding it across, you can look through the edge and actually look right into the room, and basically it's futile. You're going to get a much wider door, and you're right, the hardware and everything that goes with it, it all has to be worked out. But, those are the uniquenesses. Now, the other thing I wanted to bring out, and I think it's extremely, extremely important, is that if you're going to go with either a pocket and or a slider, you must pick the very best heavy-duty rolling hardware that can be selected. Do not pick the cheapest of the cheap, because that door will, let's just put it this way, you'll swear it every time. It's a prime example of you pay for what you get. And if you do not pay them enough to get quality, heavy-duty, commercial sliding door or pocket door hardware, you basically live to regret it. You'll hate it, and the things won't work properly. They won't be smooth. And there's nothing more pleasurable than having a perfectly balanced, super heavy-duty sliding door that you can just open with one finger. I mean, that to me, that's like the ultimate when it comes to opening the door. You can just touch that door, and it just slides open smooth as silk. You know, that's what you really need to have. Because if you got a crank on that thing and manhandle it across the opening every time, you're going to get real sick of that door real fast.
But the hardware, the door, let's say if you do a wood door, full glass, that's pretty heavy. If you do a door, the door is glass, it's also heavy. So you want to, you want to have a heavy duty hardware, to carry the door long term. Okay. For years to years of trouble free operation, some of those hardware cost just as much, if not more, than the door itself.
Yes.
Okay. But again, driving at home is that quality hardware matters.
In that particular case, it matters greatly. Yes, it matters greatly, because nothing worse than trying to open that sticky, crappy sliding door that has the square wheels. We've all seen them. We've all dealt with them. You know, you're not buying the stuff that you get at Home Depot or Menards and putting it in, because that stuff just will not hold up. It won't hold up these heavy doors. A commercial grade door that more than likely might have glass in it. I mean, you're talking about a wood door with a wood frame and a full glass door. You could be looking at several hundred pounds on that door. And that's pretty heavy.
Yes, it is. And it depends on the width of the door and the height of the doors. Okay? But it has to be sized according to, you know, the weight requirement and or rating. So, yeah, it's very important. Okay?
Now, we haven't talked about, and there's one little nuance that in this particular case, a prime example is Dr. Hunsinger's place. His operatories originally were designed with arch openings that went into the ops themselves. Each operatory has two doors or two openings that go into it, one for the patient and the doctor, the other for the staff. And both of those have arched openings in them. The original architect thought it was cool, thought it looked good, had a nice architectural feel. Now, how do you go back in and retrofit a door like, how do you go back and retrofit an operatory like that and place doors in it? What do you think, Han?
And the whole objective is, yes, the arch is nice. It's a nice design feature. And if you want to, if you want to maintain that architecture, that aesthetic, certain things need to be addressed. The cheap way for a lot of people is simply, just close it up, throw the wall on there, throw a door on there. But you can retain that architecture, that detail, and put in the door. And what we talk about is that pocket door can be done, can be installed where the door don't have to be arch. It could be, it could be rectangular, and it goes into the pocket. As long as the pocket and all that stuff is designed properly, that opening could be closed, and the architecture aesthetic of the facility is not violated. Okay,
exactly.
Because aesthetic is important, but functionality and all the other stuff also need to be addressed, appropriately. That's why architects is the people that were the problem solver. It can give you the best of all worlds. They've done
right. Because in that particular scenario, you only have two options. You can put a custom arch top door and put swingers in.
Ouch.
So each one of those are going to be very expensive. And because of the architecture and the way that was designed, each arch was different. Meaning the arch for the 3-foot opening for the doctor and the patient is a different arch than the arch for the technician opening. So you're looking at two complete different sets, and you've got to verify that each one of those arches in every operatory matches the other. 9 times out of 10, they won't match. So you're looking at trying to do custom arch-top swinging doors in each operatory. That is a pricey opportunity for any millwork guy to be able to do that. That's going to be extremely expensive. So the discussion that we've talked about is putting in a square-top pocket door that goes the whole height of the arch. By sliding that across the arched opening, no one knows that it's a square door, and you've sealed off the space nicely. The other option could have been that you could have created an arched kind of transom and done that out of glass or wood or something like that and put in a standard flat top door. But then that would have really changed the architecture of the space. And if I'm not mistaken, the actual arches would have been lower than the standard 7-foot door. So the bottom edges would have been lower, so it would have been not practical in this particular situation. So, but my point is, our point is very important, is no matter what your particular situation is, there are options. There are ways to do things. You just need to get somebody that can, you know, think outside the box and actually create those, or at least design them in such a way that it can be built. On you were going to say?
Yeah, I think, Jim, explain what is a transom.
A transom is basically the area above a door. A lot of older architecture had areas that were, let's say you have a door that's 7 feet, but then you might have a window above that door that might be a foot or 2 foot higher. And a lot of times that was done back in the old buildings to allow for air circulation. These were operable and it allowed air to flow through, but still close the door and keep, you know, security. So within the space, it used a lot in schools back in the, you know, the 20s, that kind of stuff. So the architecture of a transom, meaning you could have an area above a door or a window, could have been integrated, but in this case, it wasn't practical.
And for modern building, particularly if you have only windows on the, you know, along the outside wall of one side of the building, transom could be used, and or clerestory, internal clerestory. Sometimes the term borrow light is used. It allows you to bring light from the outside deep into the building. There's a lot of different things. This has nothing to do with door, but there's a lot of different tricks in the design of buildings that you can enhance the interior space without, you know, without mechanical means and things like that. But that, you know, we'll save that for a different discussion. I jump.
Yeah. In actuality, we've already burnt through our hour. We haven't even got the flooring because that's next on our list that we wanted to talk about. So, Han, was there anything else we wanted to talk about on doors at this point? And
you know,
have
the
topic
of
flooring until next show.
Yeah, the topic of doors, for as boring it might sound, it takes a lot of time. So I think we just have a couple of minutes, and we'll stick with doors, okay? Doors in your office, you know, there each door have a specific function. Your interior door is not the same as your exterior door. So let's say if you are in a environment or a practice that has a lot of traffic, that you serve a lot of kids, and they're a bit more active, and you find your door get gouged all the time, and you want to keep it have it more durable, but you don't want to put in institutionally hollow metal doors. There are door manufacturers that makes high performance door that you find like in hospitals, but they still like wood doors there, so that you retain the high aesthetic value of your space, but your doors can survive the abused condition that it's, you know, where it's installed. So for doors, you don't have to settle for what's available at the big box store. And trust me, your builder may or may not know about anything except get it to go to the lumber yard and pick out something, paint it, install. Okay, your architect, most of them have the resource and the knowledge to meet any requirement that you have, any problem that you want to solve. I think I'm done with that, Jim.
Yep, that makes absolute sense. There's a lot of options. Thank you for spending the time listening to all our good stuff about this. Hopefully it's been helpful, and that, you know, now that you're hopefully in the situation where you're beginning to open or you're opened, and you say, I've got to start doing some things. I need to do this or this or that. And this was helpful to maybe at least give you the knowledge to be able to make some educated decisions about walls and doors in that regard. We're going to save floors for next week. And obviously, there's going to be a lot more other good things we're going to have on our next show. So again, you know, thank you for listening to us and spending the time with us. And Han, I'll give you the last words.
Terrific. Our website is www.hjtdesign.com. We welcome your input. If there is topic that you are curious about and like us to discuss and share with you and others, please drop us a note. Again, we went to an hour. It's exciting for us. We talk shop all the time, and we can do it all day long. I hope that, yeah, like Jim said, I hope it brings some value to you, that give you some knowledge, so that way you can make the kind of the right decision for your particular situation. Again, appreciate your time. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.